Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show. By Silker Joe Show, co-host Joe, filling in for Alan today, as promised. While he is on assignment, but don't worry, he will be back tomorrow, and he won't butcher simple two-word statements like, he will. If he were here today, though, he would give to you his mantra. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. The Alan Nathan Show comes to you these days, courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network, so I want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for that. Alan's show, actually, yesterday, it turned 28, so he's now in his 29th year of national syndication. Wait a minute. No, it must have turned. It turned 27 yesterday because he started in 1998, so it turned 27 yesterday. So he's in his 28th year of national syndication. I think he got his numbers wrong when he told me. That's right. He's not here to defend himself, so I'm blaming him for the mix-up. But he is the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist talk host in the country. We want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for the support during this time, during the last 15 years of the show's existence, helping us keep it on the air. We appreciate that. And you can show your appreciation. Go to MainStreetMediaNetwork.com. You'll find the Alan Nathan Show up there. You'll find the Silker Joe Show up there. You'll find a live stream for the shows whenever they're airing. Actually, for Alan's show, it's quite simple. You just tune in. Turn on, tune in, and pay attention. Don't drop out. But it runs the show every day. Repeats the show every 2 hours until a new show comes along at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and again repeats 2 hours until 5 o'clock Eastern Time until the weekends, where I don't know what happens because it's the weekend. I'm off doing my show and then I'm off, period, so I'm not paying attention. But maybe y'all can tell me. There's an email address at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com for the official account of the station of the website. So maybe you can email them what happens, and they'll filter it over to me. And we also want to thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. But you can also go to alannathan.com. Great website. I think that also has a live stream. It's got podcasts up there as well. And you can find us on social media, on Twitter/X at Alan Nathan, but also Facebook and Wimkin and Twitter and Main Street Radio Network's pages. Anyway, at this point, Alan will give to you the pre-written topics that appear on those pages. I got mine right here. CNN and MSNBC continue pushing Hamas propaganda while Washington Post and BBC correct the record on a non-existent massacre. Why the disconnect? Also, fiscal hawks hold up the big, beautiful bill, but do they have a point? And would future rescission packages make this an easier pill for them to swallow? I'm going to start with that first topic first, just because it's sort of a continuation of what I was discussing on Monday. I mentioned how there was this narrative that came out right before, I believe it was before, the attempted massacre in Colorado on Sunday. And the narrative was that Israeli soldiers had fired on aid workers and Palestinians seeking aid in Gaza. That wasn't the case. None of that ever happened. It was just propaganda from Hamas. Like how, what, a year ago, 2 years ago, however long ago it was, a year and a half ago maybe, when the Hamas said that this hospital full of 5,000 people was leveled by the Israelis, and it turned out what happened was one of Hamas's own rockets crashed in a parking lot. And they said that meant that thousands of people were killed, and that propaganda was spread by the welcoming liberal media in America. And you'd think the liberal media would be tired of being lied to, but no, they aren't. CNN and MSNBC, like I said, they're still out there spreading this narrative about the massacre that didn't happen, while other sources are correcting themselves, and, or at the very least, publishing Israel's denial of it happening. So it's a non-existent massacre, but you have to ask yourself, why are they buying up Hamas's propaganda? Well, they've always bought up Hamas's propaganda. They always treat Hamas as gospel, even though they've been caught lying again and again and again and again. They still believe it. And, it's like, I guess, what the Gaza or Palestinian Health Ministry or something is the source, but it's controlled by Hamas. What are you going to, you don't think it's going to be propaganda? And they're just republishing terrorist propaganda? I mean, they wouldn't believe Vladimir Putin if he said that Ukraine was bombing hospitals and children, but they're going to believe Hamas when they say Israel's bombing hospitals and children? No. Doesn't make much sense. But then again, you got to look at their moral compasses here, and automatically Hamas is believable in their framework because Hamas represents, it's like the mass intersection of everything that the left believes in about race theory and oppression and honestly anti-Semitism and Jews. So it's all of that coming together, and they just have to believe that that Hamas is telling the truth. They cannot believe anything else, not the way their worldview is structured. It doesn't matter how many times they lie to, doesn't matter how many times it's proven that they've been lied to, none of that matters to them because they simply cannot believe anything. It's like a doomsday cult almost, you know? How any time that their doomsday comes to pass, the date they set comes to pass, and nothing happens, they're still believers. There are still hardcore believers who think that it is going to happen. There was just some sort of divine intervention that prevented it. You know, that's what the media has become around Hamas, some sort of cult like that. Because, again, of their worldview and narratives about oppression and race theory and whatnot, that the Palestinians must be the ultimate in oppressed because they got those big, evil, white, rich people next door to them. And those white, evil, rich people stole their land, colonialism, all that bull crap, when the history of that region is way different than the liberal narrative would have you believe. I mean, gee whiz, it started with the various other tribes descended from Abraham, at least according to the Holy Bible, but it started with various other tribes descended from a little bit farther down the line than that as well. And, you know, the Bible does a good job tracing the genealogies at least to where the Israelis had common ancestors with some of the other people, you know, believably had common ancestors. So they name off the thousands of people that lived between one age and the other. So you can at least, maybe not back to the time of Abraham. Well, yeah, it is Abraham. I was thinking Adam. But anyway, yeah, it's back to the time of Abraham, right? So that's a pretty long time ago. And they can trace it back to relatives there. And yet, the Israelis came in, slaughtered everyone who was in the region, yes. But the thing is, they didn't leave anybody, really. There were, like, pockets of people that they left, much to their regret later. But the point is, just about everyone today who lived in that area would have been able to trace their selves back to Israel, except the Palestinians. They just kind of... So, like, the Jews kind of had that region, but then suddenly the Muslims moved in on them. Like, 1080 or whatever, around the time of the First Crusade, because that's what the First Crusade was about. The Muslims had moved in on the territory. The Muslims weren't there before. There was no Islam in Jerusalem before. There was no Islam on the Gaza Strip before. Not until around the time of the First Crusade, because the First Crusade was in response to Jerusalem falling. It scared the death out of the Christian world. They're like, holy crap, this is our holy place here, and the Muslims got it. We gotta take it back. And so they did on the first one, but then the second, third, fourth ones met with less than successful results, and that really scared the Christian world of Islam in general and its power, and certainly emboldened the Muslims. But the point is, that is what the Muslims trace their heritage to that land to, the Crusades, whereas the Jews in Israel, they trace it back quite a bit farther, quite a few millennia farther back, their claim goes. And the left doesn't really want you to know that, though. They want you to think that the Israels were just plopped down there in the 1940s. Before that, it was just a bunch of Muslims, just sort of ignoring in general the history of Islam. But then on top of that, before the Israelis were plopped in, the area was kind of owned by the British. And then before that, it was like the Ottoman Empire, which fell right after World War I, after they lost. And that is the nature of the region. That's why it was able to be parsed up the way it was. And the Palestinians that we have now, especially, and they were told to leave. They were given ample notice to get the hell out of there. But they didn't, because they were told by local Arab countries, hey, Israel's not going to be here long. We're going to band together and wipe them out. And in 1948, the attempt was made and failed. The attempt was made several other times and failed. And that left Israel stuck with the Palestinians, who forever have this belief that the rest of the Arab world's going to come to their rescue. And then the Gazans, they're very recent because Egypt owned that land until 1967, right? So, well, not like the entirety of the history that I'm talking about. Actually, Israel owned the Gaza Strip for a while, too. Eventually, it fell into Egypt's hands, though, then back to Israel's hands. That is the modern Israel, not the historic Israel. So, there is no historic Palestinian claim to that land, is the point of this history lesson. Yet the left has you believe it otherwise. They have you believe that these evil white people stole the land from the poor, innocent brown Muslims. And it's race oppressed versus race oppressor, brown versus white, capitalism versus this whatever the hell they think that Islam is. More Alan Nathan Show after this break.
Heart disease is the leading cause of death in the U.S., but new research offers hope. A recent clinical trial shows that a once-daily anti-inflammatory medication may help reduce dangerous plaque in the arteries, offering new options for people living with heart disease. Cardiologist and program director at Harbor UCLA Medical Center, Dr. Matthew Budoff, explains how this breakthrough could change cardiovascular care.
We found that low-dose colchicine, 0.5 milligrams, can help reduce coronary plaque volume and inflammation in patients with heart disease. This may offer a new way to prevent future heart attacks or strokes by targeting a root cause, inflammation.
These findings build on prior research showing low-dose colchicine's role in lowering cardiovascular risk in high-risk patients, and it could be a vital part of your doctor's care plan.
When combined with other standard treatments, low-dose colchicine offers another tool to help patients live longer, healthier lives.
Learn more at CVDinflammation.com.
Funko's iconic pop collectibles, the vinyl figures with large signature heads inspired by pop culture characters and celebrities across film, TV, music, sports, and more, are a global sensation. Now, Funko's custom Pop Yourself line offers everyone a chance to create personalized pop replicas of themselves, friends, and loved ones. Skip the boring gifts this season and give dads and grads the gift of Pop Yourself, a personalized gift that's just as unique as they are. Graduation gowns and Father's Day accessories are just a few of the options to personalize your perfect pop. Jen Han, Funko's general manager of Pop Yourself.
Pop Yourself is more than a gift. It's a custom-made tribute. We're delighted to offer everyone the opportunity to create a personalized, thoughtful gift. So ditch the mug or gift card and give your dad or grad a fun, unforgettable keepsake.
Try Pop Yourself to commemorate special moments such as Father's Day, birthdays, baby reveals, or just about anything. To create your Pop Yourself, visit Funko.com.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey. Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Al Nathan Show. Silker Joe Show co-host Joe filling in for Al today while he's on assignment. So, it's Pride Month. Woo! And I don't know about the rest of y'all, but at least around where I live, you know, I'm seeing commercials for Juneteenth celebrations and stuff propping that up, but I haven't really seen anything about any Pride activities going on in this region. But joining us now to talk a little bit about how America in general seems to be getting rather tired of this, let's talk with Leslie Corbley, author, poet, columnist, and attorney. She was previously a visiting fellow with the American Institute for Economic Research and a policy analyst at the Libertas Institute, and her debut poetry collection is titled Silent Suffering, Poems of Pain and Purpose. Leslie Corbley, always happy to talk with you. How are you today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yep, and actually I should say your new book is Progressive Prejudice, Exposing the Devouring Mother. What's that about?
Sure. So that book explores the archetype of female predation, both through a mix of autobiography and cultural commentary. So I would argue that, you know, those on the left tend to embody more of the traits of female predation as opposed to, you know, masculine predatory behavior. So that's what the new book is about. It is available for pre-order and it comes out October 21st.
Now, how much of this predatory behavior are we seeing in this Pride Month? Not to make any puns about the rather ominous connections between communities here.
Sure. Well, I think that it exposes one of the issues that comes across in progressive spaces, which is that there's a tendency to glorify traits based on the perception that they've been marginalized in the past, right? So you see this with Pride Month, you see it with Women's History Month, African American History Month, and these aren't like bad things inherently, you know, something wrong with having a better awareness of some of the historical realities of marginalization. But that being said, I think, especially in the Pride context where you're celebrating a lot of sexual licentiousness and, frankly, hedonistic behavior, it's wise to ask, like, do we always glorify traits purely based on the fact that they were once marginalized? And I think those on the left would argue, yes, you know, for the historically marginalized group, they deserve sort of praise across the lines that they were oppressed. And I think that there's obviously room for debate there.
Well, actually, that ties into exactly what I was discussing in the last segment, how you have multiple news outlets that still buy up Hamas propaganda, despite the fact that they're caught lying all the time. And one of the reasons is because of that framework you described. It's a marginalized group, therefore we must believe and celebrate them.
Yes. Yes, without question, and that's the thing. You know, some forms of marginalization, you know, are worse than others, frankly, and I don't think the left does a great job of discriminating or making distinctions there, right? I mean, there's, just factually speaking, a big difference philosophically in saying that there's certain sexual behavior that is immoral or perhaps not conducive to human flourishing versus saying we should make character judgments on the basis of race. Now, that's not to say where you land on those issues, but, you know, this idea that because a group was marginalized for a specific reason, therefore we celebrate that trait that they have that was marginalized, I think is rather reductionist and certainly doesn't really, I don't know, it's just very reductionist and it doesn't take into account the complexity of various philosophical and ethical questions that are quite complicated. And, you know, people are going to have different views on those. You know, the idea that someone disagrees, for example, with LGBTQ lifestyles does not necessarily correlate with whether that individual harbors hatred. Yet on the left, that's often conflated, right? Because mm-hmm. that's how they view the world.
Yeah. I mean, there was a study done that showed that on average, straight person, if they are confronted with homosexual behavior of their own sex, they will have the same reaction as, you know, seeing slugs or snails crawling around.
Yeah.
So, like, the left, like, you know, for all the talk of I was born this way, you have to accept me for me, well, that sounds like a very visceral biological reaction mm-hmm. right there, but one is better, somehow more acceptable than the other.
Absolutely. And I think that, there's a tendency to say, well, society had certain biases that may have been, frankly, quite oppressive to certain individuals. I think most reasonable people would agree that the way people with homosexual leanings were treated in the past was probably not for the best, right? Again, that doesn't necessarily relate, though, to how one orients themselves towards the ethical and philosophical issues in question, nor does it necessarily say that, oh, because someone was mistreated in a way they shouldn't have, now we should glorify or take pride in in those behaviors that led to their mistreatment. I mean, these are just, you know, it's a very simplistic, I think, way of viewing what is actually quite a complicated question. You know, it's simply indisputable that the way people, individuals engage in sexual behavior affects all of society, right? I mean, it's not just an individual sex act. Now, that's not to say that you should heavily regulate sexual behavior. It's just that, you know, we need to have honest, real conversations about what some of the consequences of these behaviors are, rather than, in my opinion, you know, saying, well, this was marginalized once, let's celebrate it now.
Mm-hmm. And it also seems like there's been this sort of slippery slope with the way all this stuff is being said. You know, at first it was just, we want to be seen, we want to be acknowledged, you know, just this handful of us, this 1% of society, we just don't want to be oppressed, we want to be doing our own thing. But now it's like we deserve a parade where we can walk around half naked, if not fully naked, and mimic and mime sex acts in public that would get a straight person arrested if they were doing it.
Absolutely. Again, these are some of the things that we're just not supposed to talk about. And I think that those things happen. And you have a lot of people on the left who likely turn a blind eye or, you know, have every reason to pretend those things don't happen because it's, you know, unsavory for their movement. Just like you would have, you know, those in religious settings maybe turning a blind eye to certain types of abuse in their leadership ranks because it's uncomfortable and it is bad press, right? I think you have something similar going on in the Pride movement. I think there's plenty of LGBTQ individuals who find that heinous, frankly, who want nothing to do with it, don't want those sex acts occurring in public in parades that, you know, are affiliated with their group orientation to some degree. So, yeah, I think there's absolutely people who find that heinous who are in the LGBTQ population. And I think there are those who are more deviant, right, and who don't mind that at all, and quite frankly are pushing sexualization onto children. And then I think there are those who turn a blind eye, right? So it's sort of, again, like any other group, like there are prejudices and terrible manifestations of different cultures that occur across ideological lines. And I think those on the left tend to be very blind to that. They have a quite rigid and binary view of oppression, right? There are oppressors and there are oppressed, and those groups do not overlap. So if you are in the oppressed group, you do not engage in oppression or prejudicial thinking, right? You're sort of scrubbed from that ability, right? You have this moral status that those who are oppressors don't have, and that's just not reality.
Yeah, and we see that with not just LGBTQ stuff, but also with racism, how they had mm-hmm. to go and actually alter the dictionary definition of racism to get certain races off the hook that were engaging in racist behavior. Because according to them, certain races can't possibly do that. Even though globally whites are in the minority, that still makes they're still the evil oppressors and somehow the majority, which even undermines the very definitions that they gave it to try and justify their own ideology.
Absolutely. And it undermines the entire concept of equality that I think most people are actually drawn to. You know, equality should mean an understanding of equal rights and equal responsibilities, and that everyone has an equal capacity for good and evil, right? All people are, in fact, born equal. And it doesn't matter whether what group you end up in. You know, all groups have a tendency towards their own certain types of perversions of truth, right? And I think that we're losing sight of that, particularly on the left. They really want to have this rigid textbook definition of oppressor and oppressed that fits within their ideological system. And it's, again, that doesn't comport with reality. And I think that's what they're really running into, is that eventually, you know, oppressor, everyone can be an oppressor or oppressed just based on the circumstances of whether they have power, whether they don't, you know, what their ideological predisposition is. I mean, there's just, it's much more complicated than just white people bad.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that comes from the academic settings that they're conjuring this up in. It's all neat and clean there, far removed from reality. But Leslie Corbley, appreciate you being on the show. We got 10 seconds left here. Where can we get a copy of your book, again, Progressive Prejudice?
Sure. My website is LeslieCorbley.com. You can find it there or go over to Amazon.
All right, listeners, you can go check that out. And we'll have more Alan Nathan Show after this break. Be seeing you.
Here in the Great Hall of Shells at the Bailey Matthews National Shell Museum and Aquarium, you can see behind me plenty of species that we mentioned, right? So we wanted to find a way to celebrate, if you will, and invite everybody to come celebrate with us wherever you may be. Of course, we want you here. But different things you can do is visit inside here and learn a little bit about the shells and then go out onto the beach and pick them yourselves and then bring them home as a souvenir. Because we are the seashell capital of the world, we wanted to coincide with the first day of summer as well, because what better way to celebrate, right? So you're welcome. There's plenty of things to do, but we always want to see you here. Even more fun to do it around this time of year.
here on the islands, there is so much to do, not just here, but also on our Wild Mile, which incorporates so much of our outdoor space, the birds and animals and species that you can find on San Juan Captiva Island. And then we invite you to go on out to the beach, as Miriam mentioned.
Head to visitfortmyers.com. You can get some inspiration, see some photos, and even itineraries there.
Circle K Fuel Day is back. Just in time for Memorial Day weekend, customers can save up to 40 cents on each gallon of fuel at the pump from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. local time on Thursday, May 22nd. The discount is applied directly at the pump, so customers can enjoy their savings seamlessly. Your purchase will also have an added benefit. To honor our veterans ahead of Memorial Day, 10% of profits will be donated to the Children of Fallen Patriots Foundation, helping military children who have lost a parent in the line of duty. As people hit the road over the long weekend, customers can stretch their dollars and help give back to veterans with Circle K Fuel Day. With 5,800 Circle K locations across the U.S. participating in the Fuel Day, mark your calendar to get your discount while supplies last. To find the closest local Circle K store offering this deal, visit CircleK.com/fuel-day.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, don't tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Al Nathan Show. By Silker Joe Show, co-host Joe here with you all today. So I'm getting into this topic here. Fiscal hawks hold up the big, beautiful bill, but do they have a point in would future rescission packages make this an easier pill for them to swallow? Because the biggest thing that they're attacking this big, beautiful bill, they're like Senator Ron Johnson, Republican, is that there's this extra spending in it, and Senator Rand Paul as well. You know, they're out there saying, well, like some of the stuff, like a lot of the stuff in the bill, but there's all this spending in it. And there's apparently, according to the Congressional Budget Office, sometimes they don't get it right, but they're saying that there's $2.6 trillion of spending in it. And we've had quite a lot of deficits run up over the years. Actually, they had this little chart that Senator Ron Johnson showed us, where under Obama, for the first 3 years, we racked up $1.27 trillion in deficits. But then, thanks to the Tea Party, that got cut to half a trillion dollars in deficits. But then under Trump, it started rising again under Obama, still continued rising under Trump, even though Republicans kind of share equal responsibility for that one, I would say, given that they had, for much of that period, control of Congress. But then in 2020, it skyrockets to $3.1 trillion, but that's COVID. You know, everyone was panicking, even the Congress. And then under Biden, it was still going down, but then going up. Well, no, it was still going down a little bit, but now it's projected to go up because of this big, beautiful bill. Under Biden, his first part of the term, $1.9 trillion. Under Trump, it's projected to be $1.8 trillion until the big, beautiful bill kicks in like 2030. Then we start paying the bill for the big, beautiful bill. Goes up to $2.3 trillion and then $2.6 trillion by the middle of the 2030s. So kind of kicking the can of our debts down the road. Now, of course, none of this takes into account our unfunded liabilities, that is, commitments that the U.S. government has made to things in the future that aren't funded yet, which was like, as of 15 years ago when I first heard of them, was over $200 trillion. So that is, you know, that's counting all the retirement plans, pensions, all the federal employees right now and their pensions, all that sort of stuff that just has, and possible medical care for them as well. It's just, like I said, it's unfunded liabilities. It's all the stuff that we don't actually have spending levels for yet, and that just hasn't come to pass yet, whether or not we're going to fund them. Because, I mean, this is the worst-case scenario, that $200 trillion that I mentioned. That's like all the federal workers live to a ripe old age, as opposed to, you know, let's say half of them randomly dying off from the COVID vaccines turning out to be as bad as the farthest right of the conspiracy theories predicted, where they will kill you instantly, you know. That, you know, if the clot shots were that bad, then that $200 trillion in unfunded liabilities would be a lot less than that. So that's why I mean, not to speak flippantly of mass death due to vaccines being rushed and medical greed and power seeking from the left, but I'm just using that as an example to illustrate what unfunded liabilities mean and how they are so unpredictable that you can't really tell exactly what they are. You can only do the worst case scenario to scare people and assume maximum. And that's what you should really do when doing your financial planning. Do a worst case scenario, because you never know, you might need it. Or if that scenario doesn't come to pass, hey, look, you got all this extra money that you saved up. I'm saying that like I have any extra money to save up. I just had to pawn some damn silver coins in order to make ends meet. But anyway, speaking of the low wages that I make or my excessive spending habits, but going back to the big, beautiful bill, I'm spending like the United States flipping government. That's what I'm doing. And Senator Rand Paul and Senator Ron Johnson, they would be very disappointed in my spending. But just as they're disappointed in the big, beautiful bill. And that's what these fiscal hawks are coming down on. That's why they're called fiscal hawks. They want there to be some kind of budgetary cuts. They want there to be some kind of cut that's makes this $2.6 trillion in added spending easier to swallow, or $2.6 trillion in deficits easier to swallow. So, you know, maybe if, $9 billion, the rescission bill, that's a drop in the bucket. That's not going to do anything. That's not going to help at all, because we're talking trillions here. We're talking almost a $1 trillion increase in deficits that's projected to happen in the next 10 years if this big, beautiful bill passes. So you would need a trillion in rescission bills to come in and help at least ease it off. In fact, Ron Johnson wants to go back to pre-COVID spending. And, you know, you'd think that would be easy because of all the government employees you're trying to get rid of and all the COVID spending that we can get rid of. Because a lot of the spending, too, like I said, you see this chart, how it jumps up to $3.1 trillion during COVID, the deficits, and then that's during 2020, the height of the pandemic, and then drops down to $1.9 trillion during Biden's term, because there was some COVID spending that expired. But that's still, that $1.9 trillion, it's still $1 trillion above the pre-COVID. So there was $1 trillion of extra spending in COVID that can go away, or that's at least implied by this chart. And you know, the Trump administration has been working on that, working on clawing back misappropriated money that was spent on the wrong causes or false causes during COVID. But also just a lot of the problem, too, is that, like, what, a third of the financial requests to the Treasury were found to be fraudulent, and we lost a lot of money that way. There's no way to actually trace where that money went because the paperwork wasn't filled out right. And I guess you'd have to go through every individual transaction, which there's a ton of money, there's a ton of transactions. This could take forever. You know, it might be by the time that this, if this bill came to pass, by the mid-2030s, when we have that $2.6 trillion, it would take until then to figure out where all this damn money went that was misappropriated from the COVID coffers. But this chart also does something else, too. It kind of disrupts the Democrat narrative about deficits and how Republicans are terrible with the budget. You have, for example, it shows Bush, who has $200 billion and then $300 billion for his second term average deficit. Then Obama, for his first term, it's $1.27 trillion. Obama managed to rake in an extra $1 trillion over George W. Bush. So that kind of plops the narrative down. And then the fact that the Tea Party came in and Congress was controlled by Republicans after that for Obama's second term meant he couldn't really do much in the way of new spending because Congress had the power of the purse, so the deficit started dropping down again. And then, so that kind of disrupts that narrative about Republicans being the money ones, the ones who do all the spending and are irresponsible with your money. And again, COVID, that's you can't really say anything. That's why I didn't really like it during the 2024 campaign where they kept saying, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? Make it 5 years ago. 4 years ago was COVID. No one was better off during 2020. Everyone was scared and afraid during 2020, at least at first. Gradually, people started wising up to the scam that all we had was a glorified head cold that had actually been around since October, at the very least, floating around in the United States. Heck, I had relatives in December and January that had COVID. Of December and of 2019, January of 2020. So anyway, that was a different period. We can all ignore that $3.1 trillion. Because, you know, you're also talking about that's when the stimulus payments came out, like $2,000, $3,000 stimulus, whatever, to the taxpayers, government paying them back. So, like, and then there's the COVID relief funds, all that sort of thing. So that deficit, that was something different. That was a bipartisan deficit right there. Democrats can try to blame Trump, but they wanted it as much as he did. So really, it's the Biden years that you're looking at. And anyway, so the Congressional Budget Office there, that $2.6 trillion, though, that's pretty alarming because just how big it is. Then again, though, if we account for inflation, I don't know. Maybe that $2.6 trillion would be only equivalent to $1.8 trillion, and we'd just be the same as we are, right? Depending on how inflation goes. But I don't think the Congressional Budget Office is taking that into account. And certainly other people aren't either. According to Senator Ron Johnson here, he's saying that these budgetary deficits like this could have major effects, and we're already seeing kind of like that right now with the bond market. Quote from Ron Johnson, the bond markets are indicating things. Moody's, the last credit rating agency to downgrade our credit rating. These are all signs. So you have people. Oh, and a further quote here, it was kind of interrupted by this advertisement in the middle of the article. Another quote from Ron Johnson, they're not good signs, global investors. One of the reasons interest rates are moving up is they're not plowing their money into the U.S. bond as a safe haven. They're buying gold. Just look at what the market is telling us. The market doesn't lie. Actually, I will correct Ron Johnson on that one. The market kind of can lie. You have all them damn ESGs, for example. That's a way that the market lies. I forgot what the ESG stands for, but those groups where it's basically a bunch of left-wing investors who invest in left-wing companies and withdraw, and they have like billions of dollars at their command that they can throw around to companies based on whether or not they support left-wing causes, have diversity requirements, etc. That's a way for making the market lie. So I wouldn't say that the market lies outright. If a bunch of people decide they hate America and they have the money to do it, they might decide to take a financial hit if it means taking out America. I've talked about before on this show how you had like that top group of small investors who control the stock market. And if all those investors, or even a majority, or even a big chunk of them, were left-wing and wanted Trump to fail, they could make it happen, and they wouldn't lose much on it. More Al Nathan Show coming up after this break.
A new national survey reveals a surprising gap between what Americans believe about dental care and what they actually do. Many say they want to keep their natural teeth for life, but their habits often don't match that goal. Dr. Stephen Katz, president of the American Association of Endodontists, explains.
Most adults say they care about keeping their natural teeth, and nearly 9 in 10 believe flossing is important. But almost 60% don't floss daily, and more than 2 in 5 wait to see a dentist until they're already in pain. These delays can lead to serious dental problems.
Tooth pain doesn't have to mean tooth loss. When problems do arise, there's hope and help from a dental specialist known as an endodontist to help save your natural teeth.
That's correct. Endodontists are specialists in saving natural teeth through root canal therapy. With the right care, even a tooth that hurts or is infected can frequently be saved. But the key is acting early. Don't wait for pain.
Learn more at findmyendodontist.com. A new AARP fraud report highlights the need for better cybersecurity habits. Kathy Stokes is the director of fraud prevention programs with AARP's Fraud Watch Network.
Fraud is becoming increasingly sophisticated, yet many Americans may still be unaware of habits that can decrease their risk. Now, millions of adults have downloaded unverified apps, or they've taken social media quizzes from questionable sources, and millions have yet to enable multi-factor authentication, which is an easy step that offers additional protection for online accounts.
The good news is that protecting yourself doesn't require a tech background.
Simple steps like updating your passwords, using a VPN on public Wi-Fi, and turning on security features can help keep your information safe.
For more on how to protect yourself from the latest scams, visit AARP.org/FraudWatchNetwork. That's AARP.org/FraudWatchNetwork.
Life is expensive for the average American right now. Budgets are tight and customers are looking for ways to stretch their dollars. That's why Metro by T-Mobile is bringing back the classic $40 plan. Get a new 5G phone and a plan for just $40 flat. For a family of four, it's just $25 a line, and each person gets a free 5G phone. That's $350 in savings. When you join any new plan from Metro, the price of talk, text, and data is guaranteed for the next 5 years. Take that, inflation. For more information, visit metrobyt-mobile.com. Sponsored by T-Mobile.
The journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step. At Children International, we know that the journey to end poverty for good begins first with a child. It starts with their first checkup, lesson, opportunity, job. That journey takes commitment from people like you and me to end poverty for good. Learn more at children.org.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org.
A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Al Nathan Show. My Silver Joe Show co-host Joe filling in for Alan today while he's on assignment. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour of the program. And there's this new study out by Nate Silver, is reported by Fox News, reposted by Town Hall, posts on OutKit.com. It's all over the place. 51% of conservatives have excellent mental health, whereas 20% of liberals say they have excellent mental health. 45% say they have poor mental health compared to 19% of conservatives. In other words, conservatives, mentally speaking, are twice as healthy as liberals. And there's another poll that was done of Gen Z that shows that 40% of Gen Z males consider their mental health very good or excellent. By comparison, 20% of Gen Z females say the same. So this idea of Democrats that came out during the last election cycle as crazy old cat ladies, maybe there's something to it. Joining us now to talk about this, we have Braden Sorbo. He is an actor, author, cultural commentator, and social media star with a following of over 2 million, and author of Embrace Masculinity, Lifting Men Up in a World That Pushes Them Down. Braden Sorbo, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today?
Thanks for having me. I am doing quite well. Ready to talk.
Yep, glad to have you on. So what do you make of this survey here? It seems to kind of, at least tangentially, approach your book.
Yeah, well, there's a direct correlation between someone's mental and their physical, as well as their overall happiness. And so we see the left, which doesn't promote going out and getting exercise, doesn't promote the things that naturally make you happy, sunlight, having normal friends, and things along those lines that the right constantly uplifts. You know, where there were tons of articles that were written saying, if you work out, you might be a white supremacist or an alt-right neo-Nazi, and all of these buzzwords. And all of the Gen Zers on the right are going, well, that doesn't make any sense. I lift, and I'm not any of those things. You know, so there's a direct correlation, and we're seeing it play out in real time, where the left is highly medicated. They are over-depressed. And the right is the opposite.
Now, you have to wonder, like, what's the cause of that exactly? Is it because the left is more likely to want there to be something wrong with them, so they're more likely to seek out therapy and, again, become medicated and consequently become over-medicated, and just because they need there to be something wrong with them? Or is it because the right has a lack of awareness of mental health, which is what the left argues?
It's a little bit of what you were first saying, where the left wants something to be wrong, and so they find things to be wrong. I recently published an article about this where we replaced confession with therapy, and nobody's getting better, right? The act of confession, going and being truly sorry for the things that you've done and wanting to change, has been replaced with this kind of, well, go to a therapist, vent about your problems, be told that it's not your fault, you have childhood trauma, and then you move on with your life and book the next session, doesn't actually solve anything. And in that same sense, the right isn't out of touch with their feelings. But what they've realized is that a lot of the problems that the mainstream media and the left has been perpetuating are simply just that. They're being perpetuated. And so they've decided to, rather than fight and lower themselves down to the level of the leftists with these ad hominem attacks and these stupid platitudes that really have nothing to do with the matters at hand, they've focused on the bigger things. The left overall lacks morality. And when you lack morality, when you are your own pillar of morality, when you are your own subjective kind of deputy deciding what is right and wrong in the world, you are going to be miserable. But when you have an objective truth that you attempt to hold yourself to, sure, you're not going to reach it. You will certainly never be able to achieve perfection. But when you have something to aim towards that is bigger than yourself, we're seeing that it gives you purpose. And when you have purpose, you have desire and a drive to do better. And that's what leads to a mental clarity. That's what leads to success.
And also, it just seems to be that to the left, it's there just needs to be some sort of victimhood or oppression. I was talking with someone earlier on the show about this. They see the world in a sort of oppressed versus oppressor mentality. It comes from Marxism, of course, but so they get to go into the psychiatrist and say, well, now I have this laundry list of mental illnesses, therefore I can be oppressed, therefore I deserve attention, I am worthy.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The more, it's like a competition to see who's more oppressed than the other person. And so the more kind of disabilities you might have, well, I'm black, gay, and paraplegic, so I'm more oppressed than the regular gay person. You know, so it's this, it's like the Olympics, but to see who can have the most, you know, victimhood cards. And what we're seeing with that is it's not taking hold on Gen Z young men, which is why I wrote the book, because all these young men are going and they're watching this play out in real time. They're seeing how it affected the generations before them and even a lot of the women in Generation Z, and they're going, well, I don't want to be part of any of this. And so they're looking for something else. And so I wrote the book to be a guide. I wrote it to be sort of a handbook, if you will, for young men growing up in America today. And at the same time, I wrote it as a checklist for young women, because there are plenty of bad young men out there. When guys lack morality, they end up using their natural instincts of protection, provision, and security to dominate and to oppress other people. That is the natural, when you lack morality, the natural progression of instincts. And so young people, by and large, and this is why I like to sort of bring this in to uplift the listeners, because it's not, you know, as they say, over. We're not screwed. We're not, the country's not done for. We're close. But my generation is thankfully taking a stand, and there are people. And so I want to leave this as like a message of hope for the listeners that, yes, there are a ton of problems with the mental health epidemic and the left with this whole, I'm, you know, more oppressed than you, and I have all these problems and you don't, so therefore I am the person who deserves the victimhood status, and you are the oppressor, and you should be punished for being a terrible, evil person. You know, I want people to know that, thankfully, those grips that the left had are finally slipping. And so we have an opportunity right now to take it back.
Yeah, like my quote that my mom likes to say is, the pendulum always swings back. And so we're saying that now with all this. But, you know, it makes you, I mean, you're happy that it happens, but also it makes you kind of wonder why, because you have these parents who are raising their kids to be exactly in this kind of culture where it's important to have some sort of something wrong with you.
Yeah, it's really weird, and it goes back to the school system indoctrinating people at a very young age. And so there's been an overtaking, as a lot of people I'm sure are aware, where the government has overreached, and they've implemented curriculums that purposely indoctrinate kids. And so the parents who were raised in the same system don't know what to do, because the school doesn't teach them how to think for themselves. I mean, the first thing you learn in kindergarten is that there is a barrier to learning, and that barrier is to raise your hand. And when you raise your hand, you call attention to yourself. And it is natural instinct for us to not want to call attention to ourselves when we feel stupid. And so we teach kids to raise your hand if you want to learn. You need to ask permission, and also subconsciously, just don't learn.
That's an interesting point. But we're out of time for this hour. So again, where can our listeners get a copy of Embrace Masculinity, Lifting Men Up in a World That Pushes Them Down?
If they want to go to sorbostudios.com, that's the best place to go. If they use my last name, Sorbo, at checkout, they'll get 20% off. They can follow me on X at Braden Sorbo.
All right, listeners, you can go check that out. We're all done with you for this hour of the program. But don't forget to follow us on X while you're there at Main Street Radio or at Alan Nathan. And our websites are mainstreetradionetwork.com and alannathan.com. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.